You live in the Bronx. What's it like living here? You've lived here for a long time. What's it like living here?
Actually, I've lived here my whole life, since about the age of 4. And living in the Bronx is a struggle. It's always been a struggle. It's been a struggle for my mother and my father who raised me. Having a job where I still can't have enough to make ends meet. I've been forced to work 2 jobs and even 7 days a week where I still can't seem to get ahead. I've raised 4 children right here in this apartment. There has been times where I've had to rely on public assistance with my jobs. I have children that have gone to college. And even today, I still struggle with a job. Just seems like no matter what I do, I just can't get ahead.
When people think about people growing up in the Bronx and in other parts of New York, and especially people, Black and Latino people, when people think of those people growing up or living in New York, there's always some sense of things are tough, very tough. What's it like having, and you have a lot of sons,
mm-hmm.
and is it 3 sons?
Three sons.
What was it like for them growing up in the Bronx?
I think just like for me, fear, always fear. Our children, as they get older, I have 2 of my sons that, well, actually all 3 of my sons that have been stopped by police, not doing anything. I've tried to be a mother that asked for a curfew that really didn't work, but that's because I fear that what will happen to them out in these streets, you know? My oldest son actually did 7 years for something that he didn't do.
What happened to him?
He was accused of 2 cab driver robberies in 1999. Basically, no proof at all, but he was sent to prison for 7 to 14 years. And at that time, my son was into the rap business. He had a $90,000 contract signed with Def Jam Entertainment. And still, that didn't matter to these people. They accused him of robbing 1 cab driver for $100 in a ring and says that he smoked a cigarette in the back of the cab. My son never smoked a cigarette a day in his life, but none of that mattered. I have a handicapped son who has been arrested and thrown up against the wall for no reason at all. He's gone to visit neighbors in the project, maybe at a party. He was arrested for trespassing. The officer said, "Do you live here?" "No, I'm just visiting. There's a party here." They hauled him off to jail. You know, so it's, we've basically, as a mother, I've had to live in fear. I feel lucky and to some degree that my children have only just been arrested, because a lot of other mothers have actually lost their sons' lives. Mm-hmm. So to that degree, I feel sort of blessed. Mm-hmm. But I still don't know, you know, will that day ever come? You know, that's what it's like living here in the Bronx.
You know, I met you as part of, when I came to town, as part of the Basics bus tour.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there, and people introduced me and said, "You got to talk to Okay. How did you meet this movement for revolution? How did you hear about the Basics bus tour? And we'll start with that, and then I'll ask you the
Okay. question. I believe it happened maybe about a month ago. I was on 125th Street in Marcus Garvey Park. And some gentlemen came by with this big poster, and they were talking about the bus tour. And they asked me if I'd like to write something on the billboard, and I did. And I left my number and my email with them. And I would say maybe about a week or so later, I got a call from Ruth. And she said to me, "You know, your number and your email was left. What would you be willing to do, you know, to help us in this revolution, in this movement?" And I was like, "What do you need me to do?" You know, I basically, my whole life has been devoted toward making change, you know, for the better of people, even with, as being a mom and also as an educator in the school system. I just think that this world is just so upside down, and people only do better when they know better.
When you say the world's so upside down, what do you mean?
I mean, it doesn't seem fair to me that one household has food to throw away and another barely has food at all. I don't like the idea of one particular group of people being able to determine what I eat, where I live, what type of education I'll have, you know, and it goes back to the basic book, you know, that one particular race of people defines the lives of others, and even before our children are born, you know, they're doomed before they ever get here, and that really bothers me.
I was going to ask you about that quote, because it's one I think that really, particularly when you were talking in the beginning, and could I borrow your book for a minute?
Yes.
And I'll read it just so people know what we're talking about. I'll tell you, everywhere I've gone, this has been one of the quotes that has really, really grabbed people's hearts. It says, "No more generations of our youth, here and all around the world, whose life is over, whose fate has been sealed, who have been condemned to an early death or a life of misery and brutality, whom the system has destined for oppression and oblivion, even before they are born. I say no more of that." What about that quote did you find particularly striking?
What I found about that quote striking is that I think that for so long that we have learned to become comfortable with the abuse that we suffer on a daily basis. And when we say no more, to me it means that in our hearts and our souls that we're not going to take this anymore. You know, it's not like a smoke screen that we don't realize what's happening to us and what you're doing to us. And we have to fight back. You know, we just can't just stay laid down and do nothing. You know, that's why that's really important to me. I was a part of the Stop and Frisk Silent March, and that was really powerful. Here you had, you know, these hundreds of people, different organizations, walking down this one street all together until we got to the mayor's house. But no one said a word. But yet, you knew why we were there. And I think that's powerful. Sometimes, you know, I have to go back to maybe Martin Luther King. Like, fighting and not being able to win, you know, as far as armies and guns and rifles, sometimes no words are just as powerful as words. And I felt really good about being there. We had our signs, no more stop and frisk, and other things about Trayvon Martin and other youngsters that have been killed in this city and around the world. And it just sent a powerful message that, you know, we don't have to fight you with our fists and guns for you to understand what we're trying to say. And that was very powerful for me.
You know, one of the things that, when you mentioned this, it sort of got to me, because, you know, sitting here and you're telling your story about, you know, what happened with your sons as they were growing up and what you've gone through and what you've seen in the neighborhood and whatnot, and what you've seen in the city, you know, in terms of people's sons being killed and different things happening. And what did you think about when you heard about Trayvon Martin being murdered and how he was murdered?
Well, to be honest, because it's a typical thing here in our city, I went, another mother's child. You know, like, when does it end? There's been so many. I mean, it's almost like I'm losing count. And it touches me because it makes me look at reality and say, will it be my son tomorrow? I can't imagine what it's like to lose a child. But I know that living where I live, that it's a possibility that that day may come for me.
Yeah. Very real possibility, I think, in terms of just living here. Did you hear about this man, this young guy named Romarley Graham?
To me, they always get away with it. I mean, I'm not really ever heard of any case where they've, you know, wrongfully killed our children or imprisoned them or even beat them, where they haven't gotten away with it. Like I said, my son did 7 years for something that he didn't do. And he came out, He was supposed to be on 7 years of probation, but because my son is not the monster that they thought he was, they lessened his parole. He was done in 3 years. He's a musician, and he chose to travel the world and to share his talent. And I believe my son went over to Europe, and he was scheduled to have a concert there. And as soon as he got off, you know, the plane or whatever, he was detained, never allowed to make it to his concert, because when they looked at, you know, his papers and so forth, they went into the computer and they says, oh, we see that you have a record. So he spent, I believe it was like 4 days in this detaining center, and then put back on the plane and, you know, like, get him out of here. And this is a label that many of our young adults, as well as old ones, you know, you steal a loaf of bread because you're hungry, because you're starving, you have a family to feed. And they send you to prison for stealing a loaf of bread in a place where they tell you it's rehabilitation for you. So, I mean, doesn't that count for something? Then you walk outside those doors and your family hasn't gone away. You still have a family to feed. And you try to do things the right way. You go and you apply for a job. But you've been labeled and you've been stamped. So they'll say, no, sorry, we don't have work for you. You're an ex-con. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? Well, I mean, where do you turn to? You go to public assistance and you've got five kids to feed, but they decide that you only need $300 to feed your family of five or six people. So you get what we have or you starve to death. And that's not the way this system should be.
Well, you know, this is the thing. That is the way the system is. That's what I was going to ask you about next, because in that quote that we were reading, you know, that's the point he makes, is that doomed to all this, even before they're born, mm-hmm. and they're doomed to it by a system that's how it operates.
Yes.
What did you think about that, that idea the system does this?
It's to me, it's just not human. A system that only cares about wealth and power and is willing to just annihilate human life to get it. To me, that's not a system. I don't even know what to call it. You know, I mean, what happens to everyone else that's in need? I mean, how do you have so much hate for other people that you don't care if they breathe, if they eat, if they die, if they live? I know there's a better way. Mm-hmm. I know there is, and I put a lot of faith into this basics book, because overall, what it tells me is that we have to be united. You know, we have to come together. But a lot of times, we don't know what's being done to us. And this is why I think the basic bus tour is a wonderful thing, because it goes around and it educates people. And it gets them to see what exactly this system is doing.
Now, another thing it does is it pulls them into the movement, too.
Yes.
It actually says to people, like people said mm-hmm. to you, what can you do for this movement?
Absolutely.
Now, one of the things I want to, before we get into that, I wanted to ask you a couple more things about basics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you started reading this?
Yes, I have.
What's your feeling about it? What do you think about it?
I think that it's an awesome book. I think that so far what I've read, and like I was telling you, I'm just so into other things right now in school, but every chance I get, I pick it up. It's knowledgeable. It shows me some of the things that are being done to me that I couldn't maybe see before, you know, because it's done in a way that the system does things in a way that it like blinds you, you know. You think because if you're on public assistance, they pay your rent, or, you know, they give you a couple of food stamps, you know, your life is great. But why can't you live where they live? Why do we have to have food stamps? Why don't people just be able to have enough money to go out and to buy food? You understand what I'm saying? So it opens my eyes to some things that I was never able to see before. And I think that's the wonderful thing about this book. One piece that really stuck with me is that when you talk about public assistance, you know, everything's on the computer now, you know, and there are millions of people on public assistance and depend on that to survive. That's how they eat. And the system is able to just press a button and say, millions of you will just starve. I mean, that's not human.
Yeah, and it does it regularly.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things, too, it's interesting because a couple of other quotes in this book that mm-hmm. we feature on the tour, this leg of the tour as well, are the ones that said, American lives are not more important than other people's lives, mm-hmm. and internationals and the whole world comes first. Have you thought about that at all, what they mean to you?
Yes, what it means to me, it just seems like America is just a greedy place, you know, and they go places and they take people's lands and they put them in situations where they can't do for themselves, you know, and have to be dependent on them. No one person anywhere is more important than anyone else. We're all human beings, and we all deserve to be treated with the same respect, the same dignity, and no one should have more than another. There's no reason why those children over in those third world countries should, you know, you should see their ribs and they're starving because of mere medications and no food, you know, no family. It's just not right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think about some of these kids that are going into, you know, the Congo, mm-hmm. where they go into these kids who are like 7 years old going to the mines at 3 o'clock in the morning, come out at 9 o'clock at night.
Absolutely, they're working sun up to sundown, and whatever they're working for, they still don't have adequate food.
Well, they're working to get this mineral called coltan.
Yeah,
that goes into producing cell phones.
Isn't it something? Oh my God, it's horrible, you know. And then I think about the ones you've got 9 and 10 year old girls in places they're prostituting their bodies just to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, it's unreal. It's just unreal.
Yeah, there's a, if I can find it in here, there's a quote I'd like to read to you, but I'll see if I can find it. Oh, you have one earmarked here already. Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about this one. This is kind of interesting. You have is this the one you have earmarked here? The one about, in a world marked by profound class division, social inequality, to talk about democracy without talking about the class nature of that democracy and which class it serves is meaningless and worse. So long as society is divided into classes, there can be no democracy for all. One class or another will rule and will uphold and promote that kind of democracy which serves its interests and goals. The question is which class will rule and whether its rule and its system of democracy will serve the continuation of the eventual abolition of class divisions and the corresponding relations of exploitation, oppression, and inequality. Now, you have that highlighted.
I think what that stood out for me, I just never really understood, why are we separated? You know, why are you the poor class, the middle class, the wealthy class? Why don't we all have equal? And money seems to take preference over human life. So those who are richer and have more will always be in the predicament to keep us oppressed and keep us from not reaching that same level. And is that democracy? Is that what democracy is supposed to be about? Because I don't think so. I mean, like, democracy, like, we're all supposed to be a team, you know, and decide things together. Things are supposed to be divided up equally. I have a say, I have a right, you have a right. But in this country and around the world, we don't have a right. We have no rights. There is no democracy. You're not rich. You have no voice.
Now, here's what I want to read to you, because of what you were just saying about these mm-hmm. young women. And it says, look at all these beautiful children who are female in the world. And in addition to all the other outrages which I've referred to in terms of children throughout the slums and the shanty towns of the third world, in addition to all the horrors that will be heaped on them, the actual living in garbage and human waste in the hundreds of millions as their fate laid out before them, yes, even before they are born, there is, on top of this, for those children who are born female, the horror of everything that this will bring simply because they are female in a world of male domination. And this is true not only in the third world, in modern countries like the U.S. as well. Mm-hmm. The statistics barely capture it. The millions who will be raped, the millions more who will be routinely demeaned, deceived, degraded, and all too often brutalized by those who are supposed to be their most intimate lovers. The way in which so many women will be shamed, hounded, and harassed if they seek to exercise reproductive rights through abortion or even birth control. The many who will be forced into prostitution and pornography, and all those who, if they do not have that particular fate, and even if they achieve some success in this new world where supposedly there are no barriers for women, will be surrounded on every side and insulted at every moment by a society and a culture which degrades women on the streets, in the schools and workplaces, in the home, and on a daily basis and in countless ways. What's that say? What's that mean to you? What's that say? What do you think of it?
I've had a lot of debate and talk about this, and because of the way society is implemented, that males are dominant over females. I know that even, you know, in the corporate world, like, we can't get ahead. A lot of women have degrees, master degrees, and, you know, are suited for these jobs, but just because they're female, they don't get them, you know. I have been raped as a child. Was told, you're a woman, you know, well, you will grow up to be a woman. This is part of life. You know, this is just what men do because they can. I've been in a very, very domestic situation with my first husband, you know, where just about every day, you know, I had black eyes and so forth, you know. I had to leave and go to shelters to see that me and my kids, you know, would live. The thought, you know, that men, you have a right to do this because of their masculine strength, is just it's unbelievable. And this is another thing, you know, that needs to be addressed, because women, you know, we are women. We shouldn't be exploited and raped and beat and you know, just demoralized just because we're women. You know, there are a lot of very strong women that raise families on their own, you know, that are very productive, you know, in society, and they should be treated as such, you know, especially when you have a partner. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, and it's true, because we're born female, it's just, you know, you're a female, you do what I say, and I'm the man, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. God, it's very heavy.
Yeah.
Now, everything you're describing, I mean, actually, you have to give me a minute to gather myself. because it's very heavy, you know,
yeah.
It's very real, and it's something that oftentimes is kept in the shadows,
mm-hmm.
when you talk about what happened to you just by virtue of being a woman,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's something that, again, women are taught to be one, somehow it's your fault.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. If you had, oh, that dress is a little short, if you hadn't wore that dress, maybe you wouldn't have got raped. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're not even allowed to wear the clothing that we want to. You know, it's always for some reason, it's always our fault. You know, like I said, my first husband and I, we met when I was 14 and he was 19. I was physically abused and raped by the time that I was 20, and I actually married him. God, don't even ask me why, but then is where, you know, I began to learn about the abuse, you know, that women have to take. And, you know, he would get drunk, and today I'd have a black eye, and tomorrow he'd be sorry, you know. And my kids were in turmoil. They were always shaking and nervous, not knowing what's going to happen today, what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, my daughter learned how to dial 911 in the dark by the time she was 5 years old. You know, I've been beaten with police rods. I've been stabbed. I mean, you name it. It's been done. You know, and this is why I fight as hard as I do. You know, no matter what has happened to me, I realize that I have to continue to fight so that this can change.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Given everything you've been talking about, what you've gone through, what you've seen, what did it mean to you to find this movement for revolution?
It meant, thank God, somebody else sees the vision that I have for changing what women go through, for changing the educational systems so that everything is equal when it comes to education, changing that some countries are starving and some that are not, just making changes to better human life, period. And that's how I felt. I've had this vision my whole life. There's really people out here that share my vision. And that's why it was like a godsend. Wow, God sent these people to me. Like, see, somebody else thinks what you think, you know? And that's why I'm just so happy to contribute, to do whatever I can to make this movement a success.
One last question. You didn't know about Bob Avakian.
I didn't.
No. And that's the purpose of this tour, mm-hmm. is to actually reach people like you and to turn you on to who Bob Avakian is and what his work and vision is. What do you think about that now?
I think I've never met this man. I've just started reading his book. But I think that he is a leader. A leader is a person that has a vision and is so genuine in that vision that they're allowed to get other people to share that vision and to become a part of it. And in my opinion, he's a leader in a positive manner. You know, people say, oh, you know, communists or whatever. Listen, this man is teaching me things that I never knew before and is showing me a way to change the things that I feel that needs to be changed, which is this whole world, by the way, you know. It's powerful stuff.